Last week, I talked about how having just finished our series on worship, I talked about the idea of moment-by-moment worship being a way to imagine what obedience to the greatest commandment might look like. Jesus said the greatest command is to love God, heart, soul, mind, and strength. And an image of going through our lives moment by moment, praising and honoring and blessing God for all that God is and all that God has done, I think is a helpful way, at least for me, to imagine what obeying that greatest command would look like. And then we talked about the second greatest command and said over the next couple of weeks we would focus on loving our neighbors. And we looked at this passage in Luke chapter 10 where the teacher of the law came to Jesus asking what to do to inherit eternal life. And Jesus ended up saying to go and show mercy the way that this character that we call the Good Samaritan did. And ask us to think about what it might look like to be the ones who showed mercy. What would happen? I believe the same thing would happen for us. This is what Jesus told the teacher of the law. Do this and you will live. You will find the life that you were created to live. And we continue on that theme of loving our neighbor today. And today as we look at a passage in Romans 8, I want us to ask ourselves some questions. First of all, if we're thinking about going and being good news to our neighbors, going and showing mercy to our neighbors, being light and salt and yeast to our neighbors, as Jesus calls us to do, I want us to think about, what do we have to offer our neighbors? And ask us to think about, what if we were people who helped our neighbors to win, helped our neighbors to succeed, helped our neighbors to be happy. That would make us ask a question about, what is a win to you? What is success? What does success look like? What is your picture of success? And I think in our world and all through our lives, we are constantly bombarded by images that are supposed to be what success, what a win looks like. And so I want us to think about those things. I imagine that if I asked this audience, what was the greatest movie ever made? I imagine that it would be just about 100% unanimous that we would all say The Princess Bride. Now, I'm not saying that's true. I said I imagine. But what's not to like? A poor farm boy falls in love with the landowner's daughter, but he goes off to seek his fortune, promising to return for it. He fell in with pirates. He lives under constant threat of death. Good job, Wesley. Good day. I'll most likely kill you in the morning. But because of his character, and because of just the way that he went about life, and because he talked about this true love that he had back home, he was spared by the pirate. And actually, the Dread Pirate Roberts takes him under his wing, and he becomes the next Dread Pirate Roberts after the old one retires. It's amazing. Then he comes back for the princess, only to find her promised in marriage to a prince. But also, the prince who is evil has plotted to have her murdered in order to start a war between Florin and Gilder, the sworn enemy of Florin. So there's definitely going to be a spoiler alert. Spoiler alert. If you haven't seen this movie and you're going to rush out and rent it, you might want to excuse yourself for a minute. But he comes to get her and he has to climb the cliffs of insanity.
And then he's forced to go up against this amazing swordsman, Inigo Montoya, with steel. He's forced to engage in hand-to-hand combat with a giant, Fezzik. And he has to survive a battle of wits with the brains of the operation, Vicini, who's brilliant. He's so brilliant, he's been hired to kidnap the princess and start a war. That takes a lot of brains. In his own words, he said, "Have you heard of Aristotle, Plato, Socrates? Morons." But he wins all three of these battles. And he goes and he finds the princess, but then, I mean, it goes on, and I don't have time to do the whole movie, but they have to go through the fire swamp. And the princess says, "We'll never survive the fire swamp." He says, "You're only saying that because no one ever has." But then they go through the fire swamp. He gives himself, and he surrenders himself to the evil prince in order to save the princess. And then he goes through torture and having with just two friends to face an army, even though he's mostly dead. But in the end, and here's the big spoiler alert, in the end, he rescues his princess. And not only that, but Inigo Montoya and Fezzik the giant both find redemption too. And then it ends with the most passionate kiss ever in the history of kissing. I mean, I'm thinking, like, top that. That's the greatest movie ever. But along the way, the thing that makes up the story is all the struggles and the challenges and the hardship and the suffering that he has to go through to get there. And that's why it's a good story. Look at Romans chapter 8, starting at verse 18. "So I consider that our present sufferings are not worth comparing with the glory that will be revealed in us. The creation waits in eager expectation for the sons of God to be revealed. For the creation was subjected to frustration, not by its own choice, but by the will of the one who subjected it, in hope that the creation itself will be liberated from its bondage to decay and brought into the glorious freedom of the children of God. We know that the whole creation has been groaning as in the pains of childbirth right up to the present time. Not only so, but we ourselves, who have the first fruits of the Spirit, groan inwardly as we wait eagerly for our adoption as sons and daughters, the redemption of our bodies. For in this hope we were saved, but hope that is seen is no hope at all. Who hopes for what he already has? But if we hope for what we do not yet have, we wait for it patiently." Here the Apostle Paul says that all of creation waits in eager expectation for the sons and daughters of God to be revealed. Creation itself, all created things can't wait to see what God's family is going to turn out like. Waiting in eager expectation. Those of us who are parents know what it's like to wait in eager expectation. Not being able to wait for Alex and Austin to be born. Not being able to wait to get to China to meet Julia. Eager expectation, longing. Creation can't wait to see what our spiritual family will look like, God's sons and daughters. He says, the present suffering is not worth comparing to the glory that will be revealed. He says, like the pains of childbirth. And the Bible talks about how after the pains of childbirth, that the pains of childbirth only last for a moment because of the joy of the arrived child. And we experience that right away in the car on the way home from the hospital after Alex was born. Sue said, I could do that again. And it had been pretty traumatic. But almost immediately, the joy of having our son outweighed the struggle of childbirth. It was difficult, but nothing compared to the final result. Verse 23 says, we eagerly await our adoption. I just think it's fascinating that our relationship with God is called an adoption. You know, sometimes, unfortunately, we hear about, you know, unplanned pregnancies. I've even heard people refer almost like this, as if it were a term of affection. My little accident. First of all, don't ever say that. Even if it's true. That's just a terrible thing to say. But I tell you this, happy accidents, unplanned pregnancies, there's no such thing as an unplanned adoption. You can't slip up and adopt somebody. It takes a long time, a lot of money. It's an involved process. Lots of paperwork. For those of you who love paperwork, that's your gig right there. The point is God really, really wanted you as his daughter. God really, really wanted you as a son. But through, and there's this amazing picture of how it's going to be eventually. But through all this language, all this description of the glorious result, the glorious outcome that's going to happen in the future, what does it say about the present? Well, it says in describing the present, there are things like this: suffering, frustration, bondage, decay, groaning, and the need for patient hope. The future will be glorious. It just may not be there quite yet, but it's on the way. It's in the process. You know, why do we like stories of struggle and overcoming? Because when we see that, we say, that's real. That's true. That's the way most of us experience life. Not that there's nothing good, but some really bad stuff along the way. There's some hard stuff. There's some suffering. There's frustration. There's groaning. There's longing. But what is it all pointing toward? Paul says it's pointing to redemption. It's pointing to redemption. The point is, although there may be some junk going on right now that you would never choose, God is redeeming you. God is telling a bigger story and invites us to be a part of it. And there's this bigger story, this glorious outcome that's bigger than whatever present suffering is going on right now. You're invited to be a part of that story. It's a story of redemption, of transformation, of salvation that doesn't have to be earned. God's story is glorious, but God also tells the truth along the way. God's story is bigger than the present suffering and frustration and bondage and decay and groaning. me throw another story at you. How's this for a story? He was born into the richest family in town. He was stunningly handsome and amazingly athletic. He went to the finest schools around, and now at 38 years of age, wait for it, he just moved up to the big Mercedes. The end. You guys didn't seem to like my story. I made that up. I made it up to be a terrible story. And it's a terrible story. Not because it's terrible to move up to the big Mercedes. It's terrible because it's boring. It's just a boring story. Some kid born with a silver spoon in his mouth has every advantage you can imagine, and lo and behold, he gets a big Mercedes. Whoop-de-doo. Who cares? But that's the kind of thing that's held up to us all the time as a measure of success. A snapshot of supposed perfection. You watch the commercial for the big Mercedes and you think, I've got to get one of those. Because you get this snapshot, and it looks like, man, if that happened to me, or I got that thing, or if I lived there, or if I wore that, I would be happy. I would have arrived. There's no telling what I could do if I had the big Mercedes. These are powerful images that are good, really good, at doing what they're designed to do, and that is portray a picture of a perfect life and create dissatisfaction about our own life circumstances. That's what advertising is designed to do. Give you a snapshot of perfection and make you unhappy with where you are, so you'll go after that thing. And so we're bombarded by these pictures all the time. The perfect car, the perfect house, the perfect outfit, the perfect vacation. You know, they say the camera doesn't lie. And that may be true, but as someone who spent 15 years as a graphic designer, I'm going to tell you this. The camera doesn't lie, but Photoshop does. So do the captions we put under the pictures. The captions that say, this snapshot is what will make you happy. This snapshot will mean you have arrived. This snapshot, you in these shoes, you in this car, you in this house, will mean you've won. And those images are really great. They're really powerful and effective at making us discontent, dissatisfied with where we are. But this passage talks about another reality that's going on. And it says that all of creation, it includes us, but it includes everybody you've ever known, the created physical world even in some way that I don't understand, is longing to see what God's best for us is. All creation is longing to see what God's sons and daughters are going to look like when God gets finished with us. Whether the creation even knows that's what they're longing for or not, it doesn't matter. I think that's what we're longing for. If we imagine ourselves as going out to be good news to our neighbors, we have to imagine our neighbors as longing to see what God's best for them is. Every corporation that invests in advertising has an idea of what your best is, of what a win is for you, of what success is. Well, so does God. Another way to say it is, we're all looking for life. We're all looking for real life. We're all looking for a life that's meaningful. The life that we were created to live. Jesus said in Luke 10, if you love God, heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself, do this and you will live. But we're constantly offered substitutes for that. So many other things promising life. Get this and you will live. So if we're trying to imagine what we have to offer our neighbors, I think we can fall into the trap that says what we have to offer our neighbors is another snapshot of perfection. That we have to be some kind of, what in advertising we would call a stock family photo, where it's not really a family. You just hire four actors, models. Hire some models and put them together, and they're all clean and shiny, and you take a picture. And people look at that, and they see the picture on, in department store ads, or on billboards, or on church websites.
And you go, oh,
I can never be like that. I think there's this reality. I've talked about this with different people. There's something, whether it's sports or music or something, there are some athletes that when you watch them, it inspires you. There's some, some golfers that you watch them and it inspires you to go out and work on your game. There are other golfers that you watch and it inspires you to go sell your clubs. There's some guitar players that I watch and I'm inspired to go practice. And other guitar players I watch and I think, I don't play guitar. It's like, that's kindling. I need to sell it. Do something else. And sometimes I think, there's this image that sometimes we can look at the stock family photos presented to us. And we think, I can never be like that. It's this picture that it just looks perfect. And we can fall into the trap that says, well, if I'm not perfect, then I have nothing to offer. That's not the way God looks at us. Because God is not holding up a perfect picture. God's telling a bigger story. Our neighbors don't need to see our perfection. They need to see our redemption. Our neighbors are not longing to see our perfection. They're longing to see that people just like them can be redeemed. And just as God tells a story that's glorious at the end, but it tells the truth along the way, what our neighbors want is people who believe in a glorious outcome but tell the truth along the way. People who don't present ourselves as the stock church photo, then instead of inspiring people to engage and to be real, it inspires them to say, that's not for me, because I can never be that perfect. What do we have to offer our neighbors? I'm going to tell you this. We don't have anything to offer our neighbors if it's not the fact that we are being redeemed in our suffering, in our bondage, in our frustration, in all the things that are realities, the kinds of realities that God goes ahead and tells the truth about on the way to a glorious finish. You know, coming up Friday night, we're having this thing we call Fam Jam. By the way, our Christmas program this year is going to be called Jingle Jam. I just realized that in staff meeting. And I think Sue named both of these things. So I decided to go now on Wednesdays instead of staff meeting. We have staff jam. And I had toast and jam this morning. So you're probably going to see jam showing up in a lot of places. But this Friday night, it's going to be fun. And we're going to have a great time. Family, you know, parents and kids playing together. Amazing activities for the kids, and just a practical lesson for parents, from parents who have been through it, and discussion, you know, just real discussion among parents who are in the middle of all the imperfections that we find ourselves in. Friday night's parenting discussion and lesson's not going to be about presenting a picture-perfect family. It's helping us see God's bigger picture that we're a part of, that God is redeeming us. So we want to help our families win here at Cornerstone, but I want to open our minds up a little bit wider than that, or maybe a lot wider than that. I think coming to a place where we just have a blast together, play games, enjoy time with our kids, and get real about helping our families win is great for us. But what if in our community we became known as a group of people that helped our neighbors win? Actually, regardless of what they believe right now, we just want to help them succeed. And we do that not by holding up a perfect picture, but by telling a bigger story. By telling the truth along the way. Being vulnerable. Building a kind of trust that only comes through vulnerability. Who helped our neighbors win. We wouldn't be able to keep our neighbors away. No, you know, some will stay away. But here's what I believe. I believe that in the ways of God, I find life. I believe that I'm longing for the same things that my neighbors are. But if we want this to get bigger than just being having activities that cater to us and us having being that kind of good news. It's going to take everybody here being involved. Because if we start meeting needs, something I've discovered out there, there's an endless supply of needs. It's going to take all of us engaging. All of us being vulnerable. All of us opening our eyes to the longing and suffering and bondage that's around us and within us. Jesus said this, "Come to me, you who are weary and burdened, and I'll give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, because I'm gentle and humble in heart, and you'll find rest for your souls." Now, the church is designed to be a hospital, not a retirement home. To let God debunk the lie that we have to be perfect to have something to offer. I want us to help each other debunk the lie that we have to be perfect to have something to offer. Because God is not interested in our perfection. He's interested in our redemption. And the world does not long for our perfection, but our redemption. The world doesn't need to see our perfection.